Hello. The last time I'll be with you. Sounds like I'm going to die or something, but last time in this retreat. The title of today's message is called, Do You Want to Be Used by God? That we be used by Him. Do you want to be used by God? John 6, verses 1 through 15. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with the disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes, then seeing that a large crowd was coming towards him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so these people may eat?" And he said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. One of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." And there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments, that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from 5 loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the signs that he had done, they said, "This indeed is the prophet who is to come into the world." Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. Amen. Here's a passage where Jesus feeds 5,000 in number. 5,000, they only count in men during that time, so because they usually try to count the family units, you know, so it was probably around 15 to 20,000 people, many speculate, with the 5 loaves and 2 fish. And we know that there are several people in this passage that were used by God, including the little boy who gave his lunch. And, you know, different kinds of people in this passage were used by God. So we as well can be used by God. Oh, it's really hard to see. Okay, that's okay. So, do you want to be used by God? As I said a little bit yesterday, people are either seeking for happiness or worthwhile life. I would say the best way to get both your eternal happiness and worthwhile life is to be used by God. I prayed different things in my lifetime ever since I was in high school, and 2 most frequent prayer that I prayed to the Lord was, one of them is humble me. One of them is humble me. I was so proud always, you know. So, Lord, humble me. If somebody, yeah, I was, even now I think I want to be humble. So if somebody says they're humble, they say, "I'm more humble than you," or something like that. Or if we talk about the past, about my pride, go, "Oh, I was proud to, hey, I was more proud than you," kind of like that. But Lord, humble me. Probably last 20 years or so, Lord, humble me. Always pray that. I always prayed, Lord, humble me in such a way that do not use me exceeding my character. Don't use me exceeding my character. How much I can handle, because I cannot handle that, right? So if my humility grows that much, use me, because if you use me above that, you know, I don't think I can handle that. So always pray that God would humble me. And then always, second thing I probably prayed so often is that God use me. And I was thinking, you know, what is life about if, you know, God doesn't use me in his plan? Only thing that will last is what you do for God. So, you know, pray that that will be our prayer. That will become our prayer. Same thing in my heart right now. Even now, these days, I just want to be used by God. I don't know how many years I have left to minister at CFC or left in this world till I die. I just want to be used by God till the last days. If they force me to retire at CFC, then I'll just do something else. I'll clean up the church. You know, I'll clean up. I'll set up chairs. I would love to do those. Well, I don't know if I love to do those things, but I'll gladly do those things. Anything to serve God. But some of you are already thinking, Pastor Min, you know, I know I'm going to fall, and I'm just barely a Christian, and I'm spiritually sick. You know, I don't have much. I'm inadequate. All those things become our, reason or excuse not to pray that. So we want to learn from this passage five group of people how we can be used by God. Now, but before we go into that, you're already falling asleep because you stayed up late last night. So we're going to watch a video. And then I think we're going to watch another video at the end, but we're going to watch a video here. I hope we can see clearly, but it's about a 4-minute video. If you know this old show called Johnny Carson Show. It was a talk show of today's equivalent to, who are some of the guys today? Jimmy Fallon. He was Jimmy Fallon, and he was the guy, the only guy. There are several guys now, but he was the guy at the time who was the best ever. Probably people would say he was best ever, Johnny Carson Show. And one day a pianist didn't show up, and this is what happens. You know, someone was to perform, and pianist was to perform. He didn't show up one time, and this is what happens. 4-minute video. In order for him to play that good extemporaneously, suddenly you had to practice all your life. You didn't know how you're going to, how you're going to use that. But one day, that he became world famous. We're watching this guy in Indonesia after probably like 30 years later, right? So I think it's like that, you know. We just never know when God's going to use us in a special way. And all of our lives, we're preparing for that moment. He uses us all the time, but, you know, sometimes he uses us this way, sometimes he uses us that way. But when particular moment God uses us in a certain way, we are preparing ourselves for that moment, but we just don't know. God knows. We just don't know how in the world we are going to be used. So always be prepared to be used by God. We are always preparing ourselves for the next moment so that God can use us. So, that principle, do you want to be used by God? Always prepare yourselves. So five things in this passage, five kinds of people, five things in the passage. Is it there, the outline? Okay. Question we ask, what do I feel when I feel useless? You know, because some of you feel hopeless, that you're spiritually not well and you don't know if you can be used by God. Secondly, what do I do when what I have is not enough? Question of resource. Thirdly, what do I do when I cannot change people? Question of power. What do I do when I have so little to give? Question of inadequacy. I'm so little. I'm just a small person. I don't have much. Question of inadequacy, f- fifthly, what do I do when I run out of things to give? Meaning, question of burnout. Maybe some of you have been serving for a long time, you're burnt out. I have nothing to give, nothing left. So we'll answer these five questions by looking at five people or five group of people. First of all, what do I do when I feel useless? We'll look at the person called the sick. Again, nameless. Name is not even mentioned. The sick. We see how Jesus uses everyone sovereignly. You know, there are, again, like about 5,000 or 15,000 people gathered. And you know why they came? Because verse 2 says a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that Jesus was doing on the sick. So here's just one particular person in chapter 5 who's paralytic, who's sick, and when he was healed, he was used by God. And because they saw the signs. It was a miracle, but it was called sign. Sign is something that points forward to Jesus. So miracles, we're so impressed by miracles and doing all these things, and when some people seek miracles, but miracles are really shallow things that only points forward to Jesus Christ. Like if he heals you, people are so impressed about healing, but basically it's pointing forward to Jesus who has power over sickness, disease, and death, and one day he will completely heal us spiritually. And one of the greatest healing is the healing of the heart, changing of human being, getting rid of sin. So it's a sign. Miraculously healing the sick was a sign that pointed forward to Jesus. Therefore, the sick, nameless, the sick was used by God so that so many people can come to him just by simply being healed. And we can see how God works, and God works through people, not only great people, but sick people. God can use sick people to be glorified. You are not, we realize we are only as big as the God whom we believe, whom we trust. Right? How big is your God in your mind and heart? Our problem is not the magnitude of our problem, but the size of our God. And remember, our God is great. Our God is awesome. How big is your God? Are you a little Godder, small Godder, or big Godder? Make sure you have to understand our God is infinite. And knowing that we are in association with him. Israelites, when they were in trouble, you know why they chose a king in the history of Israel? Because Israelites looked at other nations and they had great kings who defeated them. So they say, we want a king, human king that will protect us. And God was saying, I'm your king. But they still wanted the human king, so they chose Saul, first king of Israel. They chose to trust in human beings. So God graciously still gives him human king to show how they're deficient in their history. They chose a man to solve their problem. But if you choose a man bigger than your problem, then it is guaranteed one day you'll face a problem bigger than your man. And so Goliath comes. He was bigger than Saul. So whatever you trust, you're going to face problems, something bigger than what you trust to resolve your problem in your life. So when you're sick, better trust God in everything we do in our lives. There's no problem bigger than God. God is bigger than all of our problems. So when you're sick, it's just three verses here, a few verses to help us be hungry. We've been talking about this. Psalm 81 verse 10, I am the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt. Open wide your mouth and I will fill it. Isn't that interesting? Open. Let's practice it. I'll fill it. Meaning, mouth of your heart. Open it. As much as you open it, I'll fill it. Be hungry. The resources of God never runs out. He is pouring. Isaiah 6:3, and they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of His glory." You know, God's glory is right here. God's glory is right here. God's glory right here. God's glory amongst us. But we can't see it. But the whole earth is full of His glory. He's pouring Himself. It's just people who are hungry will receive it. Like the woman who touches, receives the healing power from Christ. So always be hungry. He is pouring limitlessly. That's why the ones who are hungry, like person of Psalm 23, "My cup overflows." So as much as you can handle, you receive. And thirdly, Ephesians 3:20. Are we seeing this? Okay. I love this verse. And Eric actually prayed according to this verse. I don't know whether you noticed it or not. Ephesians 3:20, "Now to Him who is able to immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine." Isn't that amazing verse? I love that verse. Right? "Now to Him who is able to immeasurably more than we can ask." How much can you ask? Spend next 10 years asking. The Bible is saying He can do more. Immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. Just imagine. Just think. Right? Think. This means imagine. Think. Just think. How great. What do you want? What do you want God to do? Just He can do more than you can imagine. How amazing. How great can our imagination be? But He says He can do more than that. If it's good for you, if it's for His glory, if it's for your joy, He'll do it. Sometimes we need to waste some time imagining how great God is. I would ask you, imagine, just waste time. Okay, how great is our God? And then apply this verse to generate strength, courage in you. I just always think about how some of you know about the universe and the stars, how many stars, and you know, I just think about that. That helps me. You know, there's a study done about with the Hubble telescope, one of the best telescopes right now. What they did was they want to see what's out there in the universe. So they didn't look at the bright spots, but they looked at the darkest spots in the sky, right? With the Hubble telescope, they took a picture and they magnified it just to see what's out there. When they magnified the darkest spot in the space, you know what they were? They were thousands and thousands of, not stars, but thousands and thousands of galaxies. Each galaxy might have tens of thousands to millions of stars. So we see the light and we think they're stars, but even the darkest space has millions and millions and millions of stars. Maybe millions of galaxies, millions and millions of stars. I think God was trying to show, and we're in the center of the, you know, God's plan. I think God was trying to show how powerful He is. He overdid it a little bit, you know, He overdid it, okay? And Hebrews chapter 1 says, Jesus Christ holds the universe by the word of His mouth. None of the stars are hitting us because Jesus, don't go over here, go over here. Okay, 52-degree angle, 3-degree angle. So we just don't even know how many stars that we have in the universe. And Jesus, with that verse, He wanted to show with the creation, how powerful and great and awesome God is. So don't worry too much about storm. It's just puddle of water to Jesus, right? Just puddle of water. And He holds everything by the word of His mouth. Just waste some time imagining how great God is. Thinking about the universe and the stars helps me. My thinking little problem isn't that big to God. As I think about this verse, "Now to Him who is able to do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine." Whatever you imagine, think about the greatest and biggest thing. He can do more than that. So he uses the sick. He uses us sick. But we need to be healed. We need to receive. As long as we have God, more of God, he's going to use us. Amen? Now, some of you are spiritually sick. I remember when I was in high school, you know, I was a Christian, but I didn't know how to live Christian. Nobody told me how to live Christian. At that time in Korean America, I was in America, Korean American ministry, there's nothing to help us. So I didn't know how to live Christian. So when I became a college student in a college group, I learned how to be committed Christian, right? So I was a, you know, very nominal Christian. I became a committed Christian. So in between, there was some addiction that I need to get rid of. And one of the addiction was, I wasn't a heavy smoker or something like that, but I was smoking during that time because I wasn't a heavy smoker, but I was still addicted. Smoking cigarette, these days smoking means a lot of other things. But at that time, the worst thing was cigarette. So I was smoking cigarette. And then I became a committed Christian, serving the Lord in the church. And then I came home, and I couldn't throw off for few months or weeks, I don't know. But I just couldn't throw off this desire to smoke, because when you smoke, that feels like so peaceful and, you know, all these things, you know, when you're stressed and things like that. So I couldn't shake it off. So one day, served in a church and came and couldn't take it off. So there was something in the closet, this, you know, little box, and came out and smoked. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I was in China, and then am I a Christian? Am I a Christian at moment. I was so discouraged and depressed, and I was devoting myself to going to full-time ministry. You know, what in the world am I doing this? Am I really a Christian? I was so discouraged and depressed and crying out to God. I remember that because I couldn't shake off my addiction. And some of you are different, struggling with different kind of addiction. That was mine at that time. Now I have a lot of other addictions, but at that time, that was it. And I felt so discouraged. Can God use a person like me? And then what? You know what? When I think back, I don't know what happened after that. I don't know what moment I quit it. I don't know what happened after that. I don't remember struggling with it anymore. I might have failed a couple more times. I don't know. I have no recollection of memory except that one. But all I know now is that I don't smoke now. Guaranteed. Okay, I'm telling you the truth. I don't smoke now. So what happened in between? I don't know. All I did was up and down. But every time I failed, I went to the Lord, tried, prayed to the Lord. But in the midst of all that, I'm over it. You are struggling with different kinds of things, all kinds of things, okay? One day, you're not going to remember, but one day you look back, oh, I'm over it. Just keep on going to the Lord. Keep on fighting. He's going to free you. Now, you're going to get into other kinds of addiction because you still have sinful desire, but keep fighting. Even now, what are some of the things you used to do in the past that you have overcome? Not necessarily bad things. Like you used to do certain things. You're kind of addicted to those things, whether it's bad, even good, some neutral things, but you don't do it anymore. Life is like that. We have desires, so we are addicted beings, whether good, neutral, bad things. But if it's bad, if it's, you know, even neutral things that you should get rid of, keep fighting. In the midst of that, you still grow, even if you don't overcome addictions, but often you will. Even if you don't overcome your addictions until you die, that's okay. It's because that's just sinful nature operating. Just keep fighting. That means you keep growing in your spirit's nature. Even in the midst of, always think of your hearts in two natures, right? Even if you're failing, you can still be growing. You know what I'm saying? Like in your sinful nature, oh, you're smoking. Like, you know, I'm talking about that in my school. Ah, and then I was praying, I was struggling. What was I doing? Even as I'm failing, I was growing in my spirit's nature because I was, you know, heart is alive, so you were always changing. And your heart is always, even now, 1 minute of prayer will change you forever. Because our heart is alive. A live thing always changes, right? And our hearts are growing. Even if we're failing, in the midst of failing, I shouldn't do this, and you're smoking, I shouldn't do this. But you're still growing because your spirit's nature is alive. and He will use you. Amen? Do you see what I'm talking about? Maybe you guys are like angels, Jesus or something, no addiction. But you know what I mean. We all understand this. And He can still use you. Don't be discouraged. Fall on the rock. Get up. Keep going. Amen? You know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, I confess my sin. Let's one at a time confess yours. So don't need to do that. I already know, so don't worry. No, I don't know. Well, I do, but that's okay. Anyway, let's keep going. Second thing here. Second is the question of resource. Secondly, what do I do when what I have is not enough? We can question of resource. Philip, we can learn from Philip. Now look at this, chapter 6, verse 5. Lifting up his eyes and seeing the large crowd was coming towards him, Jesus says, Philip, not other disciples, but Philip. Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? It says in verse 6, John specifically this talks about this explanation. He said this to test him. For he himself knew what he would do. He knew he was going to multiply the bread and feed people. A miracle is coming so that they can see who Christ is. And we can hear 2,000 years later about Jesus, right? But he said this to test him. What is test? You know, same word is used for both testing and temptation in the Bible. God tests us, Satan tempts us. Same word. Now, intention is different. Satan wants to test us so that he can tempt us so that we can be away from God. But God tests us so that we can get closer to God. God's testing is so that we can develop, we can grow. Oh, he tests us to help us to grow. Okay? So when he tests us, he's trying to teach something to the disciples. Now, why specifically Philip? Because according to John 1:44, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. He knew the region. He was from the close region, a few miles away. So he knew the region. He knew the stores that you wish we can go to, they could have gone to and then gotten the food. So he asked Philip to test him because he knew the region. So often he tests us in the area that we are expert in, we are good at. Sometimes things go wrong to test us, help us develop because we will not rely on ourselves, but we would rely on Christ. So how did he do? How did he do with this test? A, B, C, D, I think maybe D minus. It seems like he initially did well, the first part of the test. Look at this. Chapter 6, verse 7, Philip answered, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. Philip answered, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. Now, it seems like he fails the test. Right? Why? Because, not necessarily because he calculated, but Philip calculated. He was a very practical person, right? He calculates, he plans. He wonders if the resources are available, and he was a very practical person. I would not calculate like this. I would go, buffet, or cater, things like that. I would just generally say things. But there are some practical people, right? You think numbers, right? I'm not like that. Philip was like that. Philip calculated. Very practical person. He calculates, plans. He wonders if resources are available. I'm not like that, but my wife is like that. I'm like, family, let's go. And she goes, okay, where are we going to stay? Okay, how many rooms? Because she has to think of how many bags each person, how much clothes. I'm like, I have a headache already when she starts to talk. That's why I need a wife like that. We need practical people. We need, big picture people, right? Right? So Philip was a practical person. The point is, problem was not that he calculated. We need people who calculate. The problem was not that he calculated. The problem was he calculated without Jesus. Planning is fine. Don't feel guilty about planning. I know some of you are planners. I can see with your eyes. When I say planning, you're already lit up. Your spreadsheet, you're getting out your spreadsheet. Now, I wish I brought my laptop, you know. Planning is fine. Don't feel guilty about planning. Calculation is not the problem, but without Jesus, calculating without Jesus is a problem. Even as you plan and calculate, pray with it. Pray in it, right? And if there's some room, you got to do things, but it lacks, pray that God will provide, you know. Can you do something without, you know, number fitting in exactly, right? Always calculate Jesus over it and in it, you know, and more with it. John 15, verse 5, apart from me, you can do nothing. You can do something, but you cannot do anything spiritually that makes spiritual impact. You can do all things if you calculate. But what he's saying is, apart from me, you can do nothing that will make impact in eternity. That's what he's saying. Because simply, God's bread never runs out. It's just how it is. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Jesus is infinitely, eternally, unlimited person. That means all you can eat for all eternity. Do not be a hungry beggar. Be a content child of God. Ask for more grace, for the buffet of God's forgiveness, and all you can eat of God's strength available for those who are in Jesus Christ. That's God's math. Anything without God is insufficient. Anything with God is sufficient. 5 loaves and 2 fish, you'll have 12 baskets left over. That's God's math. Philip was just looking at the problems. If you just look at the problems, you will become part of the problems. Saul was looking at the problem, right? Goliath. David was looking at God, problem solver. Saul was looking at Goliath, thinking Goliath was too big to fight. But David was looking at Goliath, and he was thinking, oh, that's too big to miss. You know? So Goliath was a... Saul saw Goliath as a problem, but David thought Goliath was a big target. Oh, this is going to be easy. Close your eyes, throw anywhere, it's going to hit him. I think we need to have that kind of faith. We have a big problem. We go, wow, God's going to be more glorified. So learn to calculate with Jesus. Add him to your equation. Is your problem too big to miss? And bigger the problem, God will be glorified more. Our God is always greater than your problems. You know, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, one of my favorite verses in the Bible, especially those of you who are insecure about the future. You don't know what future holds. Proverbs 3, 5, 6, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. It doesn't say do not have understanding. Have understanding. Think, plan. But lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him always. Add him to your equation and plan. And he will make your path straight. Don't just think about what you don't have, but think about who is with you. Always. He can use what little we have. Look at this. Do you see this picture? This is money. You guys know about money, I think. I don't know that much about money. Whatever money I have, it's just gone usually. I don't know what happens. I give to people. I lose it. It's not that much. I have other things that I put. That I have other sinful addiction, but money is not one of them. But this is money, Myanmar money, Burmese, Myanmar money in Myanmar. Myanmar, you guys know Myanmar is close by here, right? I've been going there like 20 years to train pastors and things. One day, I preached so well. It was so blessing. I preached well. These grandmas, you know, came and they were shaking my hands. So I shook my hand. And then when I was shaking hands, I felt something. Oh. And they were giving me this money, these grandmas. And then they were like, I don't know, $5, $3, $10 at most or something. Not too much for me, but to them, it was like days worth of, you know, days worth of wages, maybe 1 month wage for one of the grandmas. I was thinking that, wow. First thing I thought was, hey, we got to bring this culture back to CFC, you know. Forget about that, another one. That was a joke, okay. And then I was thinking, wow. I mean, I received this kind of thing and love and all these things, but it was so blessing because it was such a sacrifice for them. And I was thinking, probably in heaven, we'll be rewarded not much, not by how much we give, but how much we keep for ourselves. If that's the standard, they will be rewarded a lot. Right? It was so a blessing to me to be able to receive this. You know, you don't need too much. God will use it. But whatever you have, do the best you can to use it for God. And they used whatever they didn't have, that much they had, they used it. And it blessed me so much. I'm talking about them in Indonesia. I talked about them in U.S. I talked about them in Ethiopia. These grandmas, nameless grandmas, just like the boy who gave the lunch. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Don't worry about the resource. Use the resource that you have, and he will use what you have or even what you don't have, give to you to use it for God. Let's go. Number three. What do I do when I cannot change other people? You're trying to minister to your family members, small group members, your friends. You can't change them. You've tried. Right? Here's Andrew. Lesson we can learn from him is bring others to Jesus. Andrew was almost really good. Look at this. John chapter 6, verse 8. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a boy here who has five barley loaves and two fish. Now, if he just stopped there, we would have gone, wow, what a great faith, Andrew, this guy, wow. He thinks Jesus can do something with this five loaves and two fish. Thousands of years later, tens of hundreds of millions of people would have said, Andrew with great faith, when we see him in heaven, wow, Andrew, you had great faith. We would have said that, but he says one phrase that would ruin his reputation forever. We got to stop talking sometime, you know. One more sentence will ruin your value. Verse 9, but what are they for so many? If he didn't say that, right? But he says it. But one thing, give credit to Andrew. He says this, there is a boy here. If there's a problem, there was a boy here. I think Philip, we talked about Philip was a task-oriented, work-oriented person, calculating. But Andrew was a people-oriented person. He doesn't say, here's five loaves and two fish. He says, here's a boy here. He's focus and emphasis was on the person, on the boy. Here's a boy here, he says, who has five loaves and two fish. He's always, when you look at Andrew, when there's a problem or whatever, when he can't do it, he just brings people to Jesus. In fact, he's the one, as soon as he finds Jesus, he brings his brother, family member, to Jesus. Look at this. John, who is that brother? John chapter 1, verse 40. One of the two heard Jesus speak and followed Jesus and was one Andrew. Andrew was one of them. Simon Peter's brother. Peter, the leader of the first century church. How did he come to know Christ? Through Andrew. Verse 41. He first found his own brother Simon. That's the first thing he does. And said to him, we have found the Messiah. He's the one who brings Peter to Jesus. So, when you don't know what to do, just bring them to Jesus. bring them to Jesus in prayer. Sometimes bring Jesus to them. Be like Jesus. Testimony. Talk like Jesus. Take time. Time-bound principle. Plant it in them. And one day, you know, God will use them. Answering questions about people is bringing them to Jesus, because those questions that they have hinders them from going to the cross, going to Jesus. So when you answer some of the questions, you're helping them to get closer to Jesus. Right? Step closer to Jesus. Family member, you worry and worry, worry. Bring them to Jesus. People worry about the next generation. Oh, hopeless. I just pray and take them to Jesus, because he said he's faithful to every generation. Sometimes I think about all those different church members, right? And I think about how much of a pain in the neck a lot of them were initially. And think about how, wow, they are leaders in the church. Some of them are pastors. Some of them are pastors in different countries. Some of them are pastors in Indonesia. But God can change people. I know that for sure. But it is God who changed them. But he used us to change them. Those people who take them to Jesus. Fourth, question of inadequacy. Oh, some of us feel inadequate. What do I do when I have so little to give? We think about this boy. Lesson we can learn from him is give them all to Jesus. Verse 9, here's a boy with 5 loaves and 2 fish. We know he gave them all. John 6, verse 9, there's a boy here who has 5 loaves and 2 fish. And we know Jesus takes it and use it to feed 5,000, 50,000 people. Liberal scholars in the U.S., they don't believe in miracles, right? So they don't believe in miracles of the Bible. So they say things like this. Oh, you know, that wasn't really a miracle. This is what Bible classes in liberal university will teach. One professor said, the famous professor said, you know, that wasn't really a miracle. What happened was boy gave his lunch, sacrifice, 5 loaves and 2 fish, and other people were hiding their lunch because they didn't really want to give it. When they saw this boy give the lunch, they were so moved. Okay. And they all gave lunch. So with that, he fed 5,000. I go, my goodness. He can be a Hollywood movie maker, right? So creative, right? But became a famous, you know, argument against the Bible, liberal scholars, amazingly. But, you know, John, who was there, writes it like this, right? If he doesn't believe this is a miracle that points to Jesus, I mean, he was there. He's recording this. And if he, you know, thinks Jesus it didn't really perform miracle, is a liar or a lunatic, whatever, would he give his life in the first century for the sake of Jesus Christ? All his disciples were immediate disciples. First century gave their lives, preaching the gospel, believing in the resurrection, believing the miracle of resurrection, preached the gospel, and they died for this message. John was one of them. This was a miracle. And he records this boy gave all he had to Jesus. John 6, verse 10. Have the people sit down. Verse 11, Jesus took the loaves. He says the loaves, meaning the specific bread that the boy gave to Jesus. Ha! Isn't that awesome? He's going to use what you give, actually what you give, to Jesus, to others. Jesus took the loaves. When he had given thanks, he distributed them, obviously using the disciples to distribute them, those who were seated, and so also the fish. And it says, as much they wanted, somewhere in there it multiplied. I thought about this phrase, Jesus took the loaves from this little boy. It's like taking the bicycle away from grandma, right? From bread, that's all the boy had. give it to me. I'm going to eat it kind of thing. Sometimes Jesus takes things away from you for your good and to use it for other people. So when God takes things away, it's for His glory. It's for your benefit. It's for so many other people's benefit. You know, you have to understand this doctrine called doctrine of self-sufficiency of God. God is totally self-sufficient by Himself, meaning He does not really need anything. So when He asks for something, right, all those things, He does not need anything, but He asks for it. He takes it for His glory, for your good, for everyone else's good, so that He'll give you more. Right? He takes the loaf, and then He takes it in His hands. Why did the bread multiply? Why did the bread have power? Because He takes it in His hands. Anything He touches becomes valuable. Anything that is in His hand multiplies. The power is not the things that were given to Jesus, but the person who takes it and person who transforms it into make it powerful thing and as He distributes it. Some people say, I don't have much, but I'll give it all to Jesus. We think like that. No, that's not how you should say it. It's not, I don't have much, but I'll give. No, it's, I don't have much, so I will give. Because if it goes into the hand of Jesus, it multiplies. If it goes into the hand of Jesus, it becomes powerful. Both quantity and quality, right? Changes when you give it to Jesus. Whatever small you have. You are a small person. You give it into His hand. He will multiply you. He will qualify you. Why? Because Jesus' hand is bloody. There's a blood in the hand of Jesus. Jesus' hand has a soil as it comes out of the grave. There's cleansing power and there's resurrection power in His hands. So when you give the bread to His hand, that bread is going to be stained with His blood. That bread is going to be stained with the soil from His grave. Whatever goes into His hands has cleansing power. Whatever good that goes into hand has a resurrection power that raises people from death. It's going to make them come alive spiritually. 12 baskets left over. Give your biscuits. He'll turn it into baskets in His blood-stained hands and soil-ridden hands. Everything He touches multiplies and becomes powerful. You know, I was reading this story of the boy who gave his lunch, little children's story to my boys when they were young. Now, oldest one's married, but when they were young boys, two boys on the side, I would always read at night and then pray for them. And one of the small children's Bible book was The Boy Who Gave His Lunch. It was well described. It was a great book. And then one line, as I was reading for the first time, I almost cried reading it because it has so much insight. It all said this, and then it says, and the boy did not have much. Boy gave all he had. But when he gave all he had, everyone was fed. And then it says this little phrase, and he was fed too. I go, wow, that's awesome insight. You know, we give everything that we have, and he takes it and he uses it, and he's going to provide what we need. He does not need anything. He just wants to use you. He wants you to be involved. If you don't give that lunch, he's going to use something else. He's going to use ravens to bring bread. Not the boy, then ravens. Not if you don't give yourself to be used by God, he'll use someone else. He'll do his work. He never loses. But he wants to use you. He wants you. So if you say no, he'll just use someone else. It's your loss, not his. He never loses. So when you give yourself to the Lord, you go, oh, now I have given myself to the Lord. God owes me something. No, when you give yourself to the Lord, heaven's going, oh, another headache added to the kingdom. You are not an asset. You're a liability. It's a financial term. But he will take us. What a privilege it is. That's why when God uses us, it's a privilege. Amen? It's not like, oh, he owes me blessing now. Oh, my goodness. It's a privilege to be used by God. Whenever you lose that sense of privilege when you're serving the Lord, change your perspective. It's an incredible privilege to be used by God. Lesson from this passage is give them all to Jesus Christ. I have this song that I used to sing. I was in a Christian gospel band when I was in college in the 80s. At that time, everybody was really bad in music. So anybody who can play music and relatively in tune would became like band members. Now these guys are so amazing musicians, incredible, right? But in those days, nobody knew how to play guitar. So anybody who plays three chords became band members. And, you know, I was a band member. We used to sing this song called Give Them All to Jesus. I used to sing it. I'm still debating whether to sing it or not, but I sang it at church. And the reason why I sing it is because even though I'm not be a great musician, it's like a bad commercial, right? When you watch bad commercial, you go, that's terrible, that's stupid. But the thing is, you remember it. That's the intention of advertisement and commercials, that you remember it. So I sang this song, and, you know, it was bad. And, you know, one of the students said, yeah, you know, it wasn't great, but, you know, but I remember the point. So I said, glory be to God. So I'm still debating whether to sing it or not, but, yeah, all right, I'll do it for the glory of God. Hey. Cheer afterwards. You're not going to cheer afterwards. Oh, yeah, just, you know, show the words when as I sing it. Oh, okay. Can you make me sound good somehow? My voice is all gone. I used to be a little bit better than now, but it's all. Afterwards, okay? Some of you might go, can you never sing again? Like, you know, next time you come. Are you tired of chasing pretty rainbows? Are you tired of spinning round and round? Wrap up all your shattered dreams of your life at the feet of Jesus, lay them down. Give them all, give them all. Give them all to Jesus. Shattered dreams and wounded hearts, broken toes. Give them all, give them all. Give them all to Jesus. And He will turn your sorrows into joy. Never said you'd only see sunshine. He never said there'd be no rain. He only promised a heart full of singing about the very things that once brought pain. Give them all, give them all. Give them all to Jesus. Shattered dreams and wounded hearts, broken toes. Give them all, give them all. Give them all to Jesus. And He will turn your sorrows into joy. Give them all, give them all. Give them all to Jesus. Shattered dreams and wounded hearts, broken toes. Give them all.
Give them all, give them all. Give them all to Jesus, and He will turn your sorrows into joy.
You remember that? The point is, I don't want any more. I can't bear to hear that. Whoa, whoa. Thank you. Thank you for the kind response. But we got to go to the fifth point, which is what do I do when I run out of things to give to other people? Simple point about from the disciples. You know, meaning question of burnout. What happens when you burn out? Simple lesson is, if you receive, you can give. Right? And John 6:11, He distributed them with those who were seated. And then verse 13 said, they gathered. So it seems that Jesus distributed, not one by one to 15,000, but using the disciples to distribute. And so they gathered. Meaning, verse 13, they gathered and filled with 12 baskets, meaning 12 people gathered, meaning 12 people distributed, 12 people gathered. It seems like they received what Jesus gave, so they were to distribute to other people. So the point is, you know, they received, and then they gave. Verse 11, He distributed them to those who are seated, and they gathered. Right? So, you know, if you receive, you can give. When you don't have anything to give, you got to receive. Very simple principle. When you burn out, you're not receiving. That's the problem. So spend some time receiving from Jesus. Whatever strength, emotional strength, time, whatever it is you need, you receive from Jesus. All you have to do is not give what you don't have, but give what you receive from Jesus to other people. My question is, who can't do that? Anybody can do that. We can always do that because the resource of Jesus Christ will never run out. If you receive from Him every morning, every day, and you're receiving a lot through this retreat, now you have something to give. You don't have to give more than you can give. You don't have to give what you don't have. Just receive, give what you receive. Always receive and give. When you don't have anything to give, just receive more from Jesus Christ. And that's why Jesus says to the disciples, you give them something to eat. And He gives us responsibility, but with responsibility, He gives us resource. Now, my question to you is, when did the bread multiply? Have you ever thought about this? When did the bread multiply? Was it when, it obviously wasn't like Jesus said, okay, I'm going to feed them 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then it's gone and it's all in their stomach. Oh, everybody fed, you know. No, it didn't happen. Somehow He shows all these things, right? He uses His people. It's all illustration, clear illustration of how God uses people. When did the bread multiply? In the hand of Jesus? He just kept giving it, right? Or was it He gives very small amount to each disciple, and when they were walking, boom! Or was it small amount, and disciples were going small, and when they were giving, right, small, but when they were taking or when they were eating, it just kept multiplying in their hands. What is the answer? I have no idea. Why? Because it does not say. I think that's the point. I think that's perhaps a good thing we can learn. Sometimes God gives us a lot. He just keeps giving it to us. Sometimes God gives us a lot. But sometimes God gives us a little. And when we use it, it multiplies. Sometimes God gives us little and we have little and we just use it. And it multiplies in the people that we minister to. Okay? So we don't know how God's going to use it, how God's going to provide for us. But just, you know, He's going to provide. Whatever He gives to us, receive it and just give it. That's all we have to do. Somewhere in there, God's going to do His work to receive His glory. Now they gathered, right? Last point is verse 13, they gathered. Now, why 12 baskets left over? Right? Why waste food? Does Jesus want us to waste food? Why 12 baskets left over? All kinds of theological explanation. People give, you know, comments about it. Commentators give. I think the reason is because this was Friday's coming. According to the beginning of the passage, you know, the Passover is coming. That's Friday. And then Saturday is coming. Saturday, Sabbath. In the Old Testament, this is allusion to Moses giving, God giving manna to Moses, and Moses having people sit down and him feeding from manna from heaven. That's in the context. You know, at that time, they were to gather every day, daily worth, and then they live with it. But except on, when the Friday approaches, because they cannot work on Saturday, they would have 2 days' worth. And now, in normal days, if they gather 2 days' worth, it would rot. When they gather on Friday for 2 days' worth, so because they can't work on Friday and Saturday, the food would not rot. I think the point is because Sabbath is coming, 12 baskets left over so that people don't have work on Saturday. Jesus is saying, I am the bread of life. I am the Sabbath. Sabbath is pointing towards we work in this life, and Jesus is the rest. That's the concept in Hebrews chapter 4. Jesus is saying, in this world we work. But the night is coming, right? We can't work. In this world, in this day, we work. But when Jesus returns, we'll have eternal rest that's coming. Keep on working until he comes. I am the rest. I will wipe out all evil, cleanse all the sins, so you don't have to work anymore. So therefore, eternal feast is coming in Jesus Christ. That's what he's pointing towards. So keep on working, keep on serving. He will use us. And what we feed other people is just a morsel of what's ahead. And Jesus will lead us to the feast, eternal happiness, eternal joy, eternal glory that is coming. And I was thinking about this boy, and this boy's life is never the same again, right? I was thinking this boy, he was a boy, maybe 6 years later he becomes a grandfather. And I can imagine him telling his grandchildren his testimony and story. Maybe in the Christmas time, his grandchildren are sitting around and saying, Grandpa, tell us about that story again when you met Jesus. And this boy, now the grandpa, is telling the story. Okay, I'll tell you again. All the children sit down and, you know, 20 grandchildren sitting down. And maybe this boy is telling the story. Yeah, one day I heard all this noise outside, and there was a bunch of people going a certain way, and they said, they were going to hear Jesus of Nazareth, carpenter, turn into a teacher and a prophet. Everybody was going to hear him and said, I wanted to go too. I was running out, and mom said, where are you going? I want to hear about Jesus. Well, what are you going to do for lunch? I don't know. Okay, I'll pack your lunch. So, opens the thing, and then there's a 5 loaves and 2 fish, packs the lunch for him, so the boy goes out. As he's about to go out, mom says, don't eat until he finishes teaching. Don't eat while he's teaching, that's rude. So after he finishes when everybody else is eating lunch. Okay, so he goes out and he sneaks out. He wants to be as close as possible. He goes under people's legs, he goes through people, he goes close to where Jesus is, and he wants to hear Jesus, but also he wants to eat lunch too, but he just holds the lunch. Oh, when is he finishing? He's listening. He wants to eat. And then after he finishes teaching, he hears him talk. He hears Jesus talking to Philip. What are we going to do with these people? How are we going to feed these people? He wants to eat his lunch, but he goes, okay, maybe Jesus can use this to feed some people. I'll give it to Jesus because he just talks about giving. So he talks to Andrew because Andrew was the friendliest looking guy. Andrew, I have this 5 loaves and 2 fish. I want to give it to Jesus so that he can use it to feed people. Andrew takes the boy to Jesus. Here's a boy with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus took it and he fed 5,000 people, everybody. And he says to the grandchildren, and I was fed too. Give all to Jesus and he will use it, and you will be fed too. I pray that we'll have that kind of testimony in our lives that we can tell our grandchildren. One more video, we're done. It's about this story of a guy named Sir Nicholas Winton. When he was about 29 years old, he rescued more than 600, mostly Jewish children, from Nazi persecution in Czechoslovakia. In fact, about 669 people. In this TV show, he wasn't really popular, but he kind of became known, so he was in this TV show. And he was sitting down, but he didn't know a lady beside her is one of the children that he saved, and this is the first time they're meeting. Okay? So let's watch this, maybe, you know, 2-minute video. One day we'll be with Jesus who saved us, and, you know, question is there anyone, just a question, is there anyone who owes their lives to Mr. Winton? And so many people around in the audience stood up. And the question that we can ask, is there anyone who owes their lives to Jesus? Can you stand up, please? And pray that all of us will stand up. That will become our testimony to others. Let's pray.